Wonderful as usual, band. Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah. Some of you may not be aware that every week we take the sermon that I'm going to be preaching and we spend time with James and figure out what music to go along with it. And James does a great job of helping us pick out the appropriate music that fits so well. So thank you. Some of you may have noticed that we have a little issue in the foyer this morning. We have an AC unit up there that's dripping water through the ceiling. And I thought, how appropriate would it have been if we had done showers of blessing? We didn't have time to figure that one out, though. But we've been sharing during this month of January about mystery. And I'll be wrapping that up this week. We'll be moving on next week to into February. I'm not ready to let January go yet. Any of you still hanging on to the last year? Surely not, right? Okay. Good. But we're going to wrap up mystery this week. I've shared with you about the nature of mystery, what mystery really is for us in a spiritual sense. We talked about mystery and the self last week, and I want to take a look at the mystery and spirit this week. Let me run over some of the definitions, if you will, that we've used along the way for mystery. A technical definition out of the dictionary was something that is difficult or impossible to understand or explain. Then Papa Charlie says, if those of you don't know, Charles Fillmore, along with his wife Myrtle, were the co-founders of the Unity Movement. And it's a little bit of a long story, but through some friends, I began to call Charles Fillmore Papa Charlie. His granddaughter did that, so I picked that up along the way. So when you hear Papa Charlie, I'm talking about Charles Fillmore, who founded Unity. And he said, every true minister of the gospel is a steward of the mysteries of God. The apostle declares in 1 Corinthians, let it so be accounted of us as the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. And that office is, as God the Spirit teaches and enables the minister, to bring forth these mysteries for the edification and consolation of the people of God. So I hope this morning you will be and have been edified and consoled by us looking at the mysteries of God. The scripture tells us, for there is nothing hid save that it should be manifested, neither was there anything made secret but that it should come to light. And I shared with you that this twofold purpose of mystery is like a two-sided coin. On one hand, mystery is deliberately hidden, and on the other hand, it is deliberately revealed. And both of those are natures of mystery. And we're going to take a look at that a little further this morning. Carl Sagan said, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be born. And then, no, I'm sorry, waiting to be known. And Soren Kierkegaard, the great philosopher, said, life is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. I like that one there. I want to share with you this morning three perspectives from which we can examine this idea of the mystery of God, the mystery of spirit. We'll begin with the Old Testament and read a passage of rather lengthy passage out of the book of Exodus. And the Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. Then Moses said, now show me your glory. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for no one can see my face and live. Then the Lord said, there is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed. Then I will remove my hand, and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen. Now this interchange with Moses here gives us the script for much of the Old Testament and how human beings related to God, to spirit, if you will. There was this notion in the Old Testament that God was a separate being, somewhere far off up in the mountains or somewhere way up in the sky, somewhere separated from humankind. And this started out very early in the Old Testament. And this worked. This is the way the people lived. This is the way they perceived God. This is the way they looked at things. This is the way they developed their theology. was this sense that God was this magnificent being beyond anything human. It was so different and so far away from human being that it had to be very special circumstances for humankind to even connect with God. And this is one of them. This experience that Moses had when he was, this was a time when he was getting the Ten Commandments. And God said, you can't see my face. You remember that wonderful old gospel song about I'll hide you in the cleft of the rock. I'll put you in the cleft of the rock and hide you there with my hand. I can still hear that in my head. The little old ladies in Murphy Creek Baptist Church singing alto. And it just made it perfect. The harmony there was great. But this is one of the perspectives of God and the mystery of God. Is that God is so hidden, is so far away. God is so mysterious that we can't even begin to understand it. And all we get to do is stand back at a distance and be in awe. Now in the writings of the Old Testament, in the early part particularly, we find this God to be judgmental and to be vindictive and to be jealous and to be wrathful. We see these things. God told the Hebrews to return to their land and kill everything in sight because it was their land and they were to take it back. That's the kind of real loving God you want to know about, right? Well, that was the perception, and let's not be harsh on the people in the early Old Testament. That was their understanding. That was the universal understanding. These people were about surviving. They didn't worry a whole lot about thriving. They were just trying to survive. And in this time, there were a lot of people who were nomadic and migratory, and they moved from place to place. And if you had the place I want, well, we're going to go to war. And usually whoever won was the ones who had the worst badass God. I mean, my wife is pointing her finger at me. Usually the people who won were the ones who had the most powerful God. So you built your God up to be the most powerful God, and that was a way of surviving. So let's not judge them for the way they looked at God. That's the best they could do. And it worked for them. It served them at the time. Now, interestingly enough, toward the end of the Old Testament, we start finding some of the prophets coming on the scene. Instead of talking about judgment and damnation and anger and fear and all of this, they begin to talk about mercy. They begin to talk about judgment. I mean, justice instead of judgment. And it began a little bit of shift in the people's minds. And then we have this great big gap. The Old Testament ends, and the spiritual history of people stops right there for a while. And then all of a sudden, the New Testament appears. And very quickly in our New Testament, who shows up? Jesus shows up. And all of a sudden, we're hearing not judgment, but love. And not wrath, but forgiveness. And Jesus begins to change the picture, so the perspective of this mystery of God changes. God is still mysterious, but God is now appearing in this human form called Jesus, talking to us and touching us and telling us things. Now that didn't solve everything, because still when Jesus spoke, people scratched their heads. You know, Jesus spoke so plainly that people missed it. So there's still mystery there, things that they couldn't quite grasp. He talked about farmers and sowing seed and sheep and goats and things like that, which should have been easily understood. And some people did, but others didn't. So the mystery was still present, even in the New Testament, when there'd been a shift in our perspective about God and the relationship between God and humankind. Again, in the Old Testament, it was a relationship of distance and awe and fear. And we moved into the New Testament, and it's now a relationship of mercy and grace and love. But there's a mystery there. And we're not quite there because there's still something of a distance. Because there's still Jesus over there and us over here, and the teachings over there and our mind and heart over here. So there's an evolution that has continued. We had the Old Testament, we had the New Testament, and now we have what I call this happened, and I don't want to take credit for something I didn't come up with. I may have read this somewhere, but I don't think so. As I was trying to go to sleep last night about midnight, it went bing. I couldn't quite figure out what to call this third stage. It's past the New Testament, and I'm going to simply call it the Contemporary Testament. Any of you read it? No, it hadn't been published yet. It won't be published because the Contemporary Testament is being written by you. And the contemporary testament is not being printed. And nobody in the future is ever going to find a scroll with the contemporary testament on it. And then I got to find scribbled on the cave wall somewhere some of these things. Because what we are doing as we are living our life and expanding our consciousness, raising our awareness, what we are doing is we are composing this contemporary testament in the ethers. We are composing it and recording it in what we call the human race consciousness, or in contemporary psychological terms, in the collective unconscious of humankind. Because this relationship with God is now at a place that is beyond the Old Testament. It is beyond the New Testament, because it happens in here. There is no external that we have to relate to. We don't learn about the truth of spirit from things out there, from somebody out there telling us. It happens in here. So my job as a steward of the mysteries of God is not to tell you something you don't know, it's to tell you what you already know and remind you that you know it. And when you are sitting here listening on Sunday morning and something goes bing, and something begins to vibrate within you, it's not because I'm brilliant and I've said it, although that may be true. It's because you know it, and I have struck that chord. One of my favorite illustrations is that you know, the guitar has, each string has a different, it represents a different note. And if you hold a guitar by a piano and play a note on the piano, you know what happens on the guitar? The corresponding string vibrates. They don't have to touch. It's the vibration of that note. I made the mistake one time of using the G string as an illustration of that. When you pluck the G string on the piano, yeah, if you laugh, that tells me something about you. But when I speak these words and your heart resonates, it's not because I've said something new to you. It's just something that you're remembering, because it's a part of you. And that's what the contemporary testament is about. It is about you and me coming to that awareness of the truth that is in us, not looking out there somewhere, but looking in here. And knowing that that truth resides within us because of who and what we are. If you are drawing breath, that truth is in you. If you are in human form in this world now, that truth is in you. In you. In you. Not somewhere else. It doesn't reside in an incarnation of God like Jesus. It doesn't reside in an Old Testament prophet speaking the truth. It doesn't reside in some ancient writings that we're going to find in a cave somewhere. That spiritual truth resides in you. In you. That is the contemporary truth. That is the contemporary testament. So when we begin to think about this mystery of God, we need not look out there somewhere. Now, the Old Testament is a good point of reference. It tells us what somebody else has done. How many of you ever had something to do? I'm kind of a fix-it guy. You know, I can't stand to throw anything away. And sometimes I come up on something, I'm not familiar with it all, and guess what I do? YouTube. Yes. I can go to YouTube and it shows me exactly how to change that filter on the boat that I've never changed before. It shows me how to change the washer in a leaking faucet, whatever. But we don't need to look for YouTube out there somewhere to tell us spiritual truth. It's here. So the Old Testament is a good point of reference. We can see how somebody else did it. We can see what somebody else thought and how it worked out for them. As I don't particularly like him, but I use this phrase all the time, Dr. Phil, saying, how's that working for you? Yeah. Well, we can use the Old Testament as a point of reference as to the failures and the successes of those who came before us. We can use the New Testament as a point of reference for how it worked before and how it didn't work before. But ultimately, where we are now, we are not holding on to the New Testament or the Old Testament saying, this is where it is, this is the truth, we got to have this. Some people are, but we don't need to do that. Because where is that truth? It is here. It's not written down somewhere. You are composing that contemporary testament right now on the ethers. You are impressing on the energy that is the collective unconscious of the human race. You are impressing on that medium what you come to know and what you come to understand and what every one of you comes to understand is important. Every little bit of insight you have. Someone came into my office one day to talk about some things, and she said, well, you know, it's a little bitty thing. It's just really insignificant, but I just wanted to tell somebody. And I said, oh my God. Because what she had come to realize changed her life. This little bitty thing that she didn't think was so important was immense. And although I didn't have the terminology back then that I do right now, what I would have said to her then, if I knew what I know now, is that right? Is that that tiny little thing that you are minimizing just made a huge wave in the consciousness of humankind. You have just imprinted on human race consciousness this awareness that changed your life, and it will change someone else's too. And when we start looking inside and we bump up against the collective unconscious where all of those things are, we begin to learn things we didn't know before. And when I come to an awareness in meditation or in prayer or in study, and it resonates within me and I say, yes, there it is, there it is. That makes an impression. And then when you are meditating and praying about the same thing, and you enter into that deep space of your heart, all of a sudden, boom, there it is, already recorded in human race consciousness, so that you don't have to spend the years that I spent trying to find it and trying to uncover it in me. When it is put into that medium of energy, that field of energy in which we live, we all can find it then. That's what Jesus did. Jesus punched a great big hole in human race consciousness so the rest of us wouldn't have to. Jesus got a whole lot of garbage out of the way so you and I didn't have to deal with it. Jesus removed a lot of blockages in the consciousness of humankind so you and I wouldn't have to deal with it. So we are in the process right now of not only researching and experiencing the mystery of spirit, but recording in that field of energy, recording in human race consciousness that truth that we have come to. And somebody else is going to come along and stumble on it and say, wow, look at this. And they would have had to spend years finding it had you not put it there. Do you feel suddenly important? I hope so. If you have any feelings of insignificance, let them go right now. Because there's not a thought you think that is insignificant. There's not a feeling that you have. There's not an insight that you have that is insignificant. Every one of them is significant and important because you are now composing the contemporary testament. If you got to meet somebody famous, how do you feel? If you're going to get somebody's autograph, you know, you kind of trembling hand, would you offer to autograph my book? What if you could meet the Apostle Paul? It'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? Well, look around you. You got biblical authors all around you, testamental authors all around you who are writing the book, who are composing the contemporary testament that holds the record of you and me looking within and finding that truth that is within us. The things that people found in the Old Testament in outer things, we find inside. The things that the New Testament people found in the experience of Jesus, we find inside. Now, I could go on for a couple more hours about this, but I shan't. But there are two things to say about that really quickly, about this inner experience. For some of you, that inner experience is taking what happened in the Old and New Testament to a whole new level of experience, of this kind of experience. You may be overwhelmed with emotion when you experience one of these connections with spirit on the inside. You may see colors and hear sounds and have all kinds of sensory experiences. That entirely is possible. It's not necessary. For some of you, that experience of connecting with spirit on the inside is almost uneventful. Seems kind of ordinary, because it is. That's the way it's supposed to be. Somebody asked me one time why we're so anxious or so prone to focus on the negative than the positive. And my response is that peace is boring. Not in truth, but in human experience. Because how are you when you're peaceful? How are you when you're not peaceful? That's addictive, right? That sensation, that buzz that you get, the things that your body goes through and starts pumping all those chemicals through your body and every cell in your body just jumping up and down. We kind of like that, even if it's painful and even if it eventually will kill us. So for some of you, that experience of truly connecting with spirit on the inside relative to what you experience in the outside is boring. It's quiet. It's still. It's easy. But let it be. Let it be that. You don't have to have a buzz to have a spiritual awakening. You don't have to have chemicals coursing through your body to have a new understanding of what the truth is of spirit. It's your experience. So sometimes it's those wow experiences, and sometimes there are those experiences. Let it be. You are the author of the contemporary testament. And your experience, you, every one of you, is valuable in this process because every one of you is contributing to this. Your experiences, your eye-opening experiences, your heart-opening experiences are all being registered for somebody along the way to bump into and say, aha, here it is. Now, does this take away the mystery of spirit? No, it doesn't. Because we still don't understand how all this stuff works. But it puts you in a different place. When you're able to go within and not depend on anything in the outer, no burning bushes or, you know, God stuffing you in a rock or anything like that. Now, let me read you a passage of Scripture. The Apostle Paul. You've heard of the Apostle Paul, right? One who wrote all the stuff in the New Testament, supposedly, anyway. He was originally called Saul. Saul was his Jewish name, and Paul was his Roman name. So that's where the confusion sometimes comes in. When he's first introduced, he's called Saul, and later he becomes Paul. So don't get unsweat about that. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogue in Damascus so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, any who had become these radical Christians all of a sudden, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on the journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what to do. The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. Now this is the experience that Paul had. It was a little bit different from the Old Testament experience because it was personal, it was individual. And there was Jesus right in front of him in this brilliant light that blinded him for several days. Your experience may be like that. It may be a sensory stimulating experience, or it may be so quiet if there was a whisper, it would cover it up. It's your experience. And that experience needs to be recorded. It needs to be felt. It needs to be experienced by you. And I would encourage you to find somebody you trust and share those experiences with them. And as I was meditating this morning, and I had just had this incredible calm that's deeper than anything I've ever experienced before. That is not insignificant. That is important. And it needs to be honored, and it needs to be recorded by your experience, your deliberate experience. So there's the mystery still present. Even though I come to a place of absolute peace and I have no question whatsoever that I am ultimately loved, I have no question whatsoever that there is purpose in this life and that I have a mission and a purpose in this life, But that's about as far as my understanding goes. How I got here, where I'm going after this, what keeps it all going, I haven't a clue, and that's okay. So the mystery is still there. But we've taken another step in experiencing that mystery. So honor and appreciate the Old Testament as a point of reference. You can honor and appreciate the New Testament as a point of reference, but do not forget that you are now the writers, the composers of the contemporary testament that records the continual evolution of humankind in our understanding and experience of the mystery of spirit. It is a mystery, but it is our mystery. Enjoy. God bless you.
Yeah, he amazes me too. But as I sat there, I'm one of those that never had much of a brilliant aha experience. But I began my Unity study with a passion that just felt like, oh my gosh, I need to know more, I need to understand. And that was 1996, and my goodness, I don't know how I got here. But I will tell you, as we are getting ready to collect our offering, some of you struggle with what to give. You have the old notion, maybe from a church that was supported by Catholicism or some other bigger branch. You have the sense that church should be free. And yet, there's that knowing in you, how can it be free? We have a 60-year-old building. We have a magnificent leak in the lobby. We've recently, paid electric bills and had the AC fixed. So of course, just like wherever you live, your spiritual home needs attention. And we need finances to support all that we have going on here, including music and ministers and office staff. So know that we appreciate so much your giving. And I would say, as you consider what value Unity of Pompano is, not just to yourself, but to the community, wouldn't you say it's priceless? It's priceless. I have no problem at all, first thing when we get a check, our monthly salary check, 10% right off the top, we give right back here. Because we are growing, we are receiving, we are appreciating. So I guess I just had to add my personal thanks and really assurance to you that staying in the flow of life by giving and receiving does give a good feeling. So let us bless our offering today together. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. An ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it. We experience it. And it multiplies itself around us, and so it is.
We got this song from a guy called Daniel Namad. Check him out. Feel free to sing along, too. This is one you can sing along with. This is called God, You Are.